Thank you, Owen, for these words. I should feel modest. I can't feel modest almost with this audience. It's impressive. I'm very honored that I have so many people in front of me, and I only hope I can live up with your expectations, because I'm not sure what expectations you have other than the title of this lecture. Ladies and gentlemen, IP laws serve to protect what the human mind invents or creates. And the reason for that is that it stimulates new inventions, new creations, and hopefully leading to more welfare. IP laws serve the interest of private persons and businesses who invest in new products, like Apple did, needing new names and new designs. And I'm particularly honored to speak to you today about an interesting case involving designs of products with an enormous commercial interest. Honored because I can speak as guest of the Stellenbosch University Chair of IP Law, currently occupied by my good friend, Owen Dean. I have to declare, in the beginning, an interest because I am acting as a member of the litigation team on Samsung's side. Don't worry, I will try to do my best to keep sufficient distance from the issues. It's sometimes not easy as an acting advocate to lose emotion, as you will, the young students, and particularly the law students, will know in the future. What are we talking about? We are talking about an enormously competitive market, and I have a recent publication of Forbes here, where you can see that Samsung was the clear winner, there I go again, shipping an estimated 63.7 million smartphones, up to 76% year over year, versus Apple at 47.8 million, up to 29%. And I'm not sure whether this caused the trouble, or whether it was this. The iPhone 4 versus the Galaxy S Plus, or this. The Apple iPad 2 versus the Samsung Galaxy 10.1. Whatever is the reason, a huge battle arose between these giants, and it is still going on. And what is the battlefield? The battlefield is across the globe. It is in the United States, where recently a jury considered Samsung to be infringing patents of invention and some designs, with damages awarded in the meantime. They were higher, but the court made almost half of it, which is, of course, a far lower amount, but it still is the amount that you will see here. And a jury verdict is on appeal before the Court of Appeal at this moment. In the European Union, there was a big part of the battle going on before the civil courts of Germany, the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, and Spain. Germany cases are still pending. The United Kingdom, the cases are finished with partly European-wide effect. The Netherlands, where Samsung won on designs but lost on one patent. And in Spain, it's pending. And then you see something very strange for you probably, which is OHIM. What the hell is that? Oh, hell, it's Monday. No. It's the Office for the Harmonization of the Internal Market. That is the office in Alicante, Spain, that takes care of the registration of trademarks and designs. And Samsung filed requests for nullification, invalidation of some of Apple's designs there. Then Australia and South Korea. Since I know that in this room there are a number of people who do not understand the law at all, which is quite a challenge for me, I thought I'd give you at least some IP basics. Some intellectual property basics. Because you have to understand what a design right is. If not, go home. It protects the appearance of a product to the extent that it is new and has individual or, as South African law says, original character. It should be novel and it should have individual character. I will explain to you what that means. And it can be two or three dimensional. And of course there are trademark rights. Trademarks serve to distinguish products of an undertaking from another undertaking. And that can also be the shape of a product. Copyright. I will not talk about copyright today. It's too complicated for me. Owen Dean is the man who knows everything about copyright. It protects an original work. But that can coincide with a design right. As long as it is original, a product can be protected by a design right, even a trademark, and sometimes copyright. Lawyer's paradise. And finally, there is always unfair competition rules. In the European Union, it protects against any misleading or confusing trade practice. What is this? What is that? Ah, the Coca-Cola bottle. So, a shape that serves as a trademark. What were Apple's weapons in the battle against Samsung? First of all, patents of invention. Technical inventions. I will not deal with those today. They are not so interesting, in fact, in this case. Because it concerns, for example, the technology of how to swipe pictures over a screen. And in fact, the Dutch court found that Samsung infringed one of those patents. Well, there was a very easy thing that could be changed, and that was it. The product could still be on the market. Design rights, the most important one. Copyright, even. No trademark rights. Absolutely interesting. And except for Germany, no unfair competition. So what is the menu for tonight? I will talk with you about Apple's design right to a tablet. And you will see that design publication soon. It's not the iPad. It's not a version of the iPad. It is an older design versus different Samsung tablets. And Apple's design rights to phones, and I will show you the design right for the iPhone 4, which is exactly the same product as depicted in the design registration. First of all, the products of Samsung, first the tablets. Here you see one of the first tablets, the 7.7. And here you see the 10.1 versus the 10.1V. You see that in particular on, I'm not sure whether this has a pointer, but it has. Here, this new one is much thinner than the former one, and it has a totally different back. Legal stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Design law in the European Union. I'm not going to explain to you design law in the United States, South Korea and Australia. Or do you want me to do that? No. The European Union. The laws in the European Union are still national laws, but they are being harmonized more and more by the European legislature. Why? Because it increases free flow of goods and services in the European Union, which is one market, 27 member states, 600 million consumers. It increases a free flow of services if the laws in the different countries are the same. So there is the so-called design directive, which caused the national laws of the member states to be in harmony with each other. So an infringement of a national design in Germany is ideally dealt with in the same way as such an infringement in France or Spain. Next to that, the European authorities created a supranational European design right, which was based in the Community Design Regulation, which gives both the possibilities for companies to file for a registered design, costs only 350 euro, and you have that right within a couple of weeks for 27 member states, for the whole of the European Union. It's unbelievable. The only thing that is being checked is whether you wrote your name in the correct way, and that's it. Can you imagine what you can do with that? It's unbelievable. And there is also, we will not talk about that today, an unregistered design right only for a short period. Now, the problem with design law and with laws in Europe in general is this. We have our national courts deciding about all these issues, but deciding about issues on a European law level. So one was very intelligent at that time. One thought, we need a supranational court, which became the Court of Justice of the European Union, established in Luxembourg. And the development of design law, in fact, is two-tier. A bit complicated, this. It's the Court of Justice at the end of the day who tells us how the law should be seen, how the law should be interpreted. And that can be done through two ways. One is that a national court says, I do not understand this European law, I need interpretation. They can ask a question to the Court of Justice in Luxembourg. And the Court of Justice in Luxembourg will give a binding rule on that particular question. But there is a second movement, and that is coming from that office in Alicante, where you can acquire for a design right, and someone can invalidate it, or try to get it invalidated at that office. And then there is an appeal procedure ending up at the Court of Justice. So you see two ways through which the Court of Justice is going to tell us how the law should be seen. Well, this is the basis of a multi-billion litigation in the world. This is a picture of the registered community design, but it is identical to the US design patent, as it is called. It's identical all over the place. And secondly, you have to understand that this is not a version of the iPad. If you look closely and you see the dimensions and you see the thickness of the machine, then you will see it is not the iPad. This is the iPad. And Apple, in fact, filed registrations for the outward appearance of the iPad. You see two here. But they didn't invoke them vis-à-vis Samsung for obvious reasons. Should they have had the possibility to do so, the case could have been a little different. Why is it obvious? Because Apple has this prior registration. And if they would invoke this one, the alleged infringer would immediately say, but because of this, this is invalid, because it's not novel. This looks quite a bit to this. And then Apple would shoot itself in the feet. If Apple would say, no, this is different, then we can say, well, then is the Samsung tablets are different. You see, that is the interesting play here. So these registrations were not invoked. This was the one, the oldest one. Some more legal stuff, ladies and gentlemen, because I just wanted to try to let you feel what the courts are struggling with. I give you a few provisions of the law. Sorry for the non-lawyers. A design shall be protected, says the European Community Design Regulation, by a community design to the extent that it is new and has individual character, South Africa originality. So it should be novel and it should have individual character. Novel, that's clear. I mean, it should not be identical to what we already knew was there on the market. Identical. It's the individual character where it becomes interesting. Article 6 of the Community Design Regulation tells us what individual character is supposed to mean. It says, a design shall be considered to have individual character if the overall impression it produces on the informed user differs from the overall impression produced on such a user by any design which has been made available to the public before. So what we see here is that apparently the courts have to look at the overall impression of a design. Then they have to ask themselves, what is the impression made on the informed user? And then finally, the last provision I want to mention here is, once you have a valid design, what can you do with it? What is the scope of protection? And then you see that the same notions are coming back. Because the law says the scope of protection conferred by a community design shall include any design which does not produce on the informed user a different overall impression. So both when you look at the design and ask yourself, is it valid in terms of what there was already on the market? The same notions are coming back when you ask yourself, oh, once we have this valid design, is this an infringement or not? And then we have to, again, look to the informed user and what is the overall impression made on such a user. And then the second one, in assessing the scope of protection, the degree of freedom of the designer in developing his design shall be taken into consideration. I will come back to this one soon. Okay, individual character, overall impression on the informed user, scope of protection, again, overall impression on the informed user, and a freedom of the designer. Now let's see, what does this mean for the courts in this particular case? And now the fascinating thing about the Apple versus Samsung battle is this. While these two companies are fighting against each other before all these courts, in particular in the European Union, the Court of Justice in Luxembourg, the highest court in the European Union, came out with very important rulings, general rulings on the law, on how to read all this. And that goes together with the Apple-Samsung decision. It's quite fascinating. So let me try to explain to you how the courts now see, for example, what an informed user is. Poor courts. Because this CJ means Court of Justice, in the case on Grupo Promer, in a minute I will explain to you what that is, said, what is the informed user? It's a middleman between the average consumer and the sectoral expert. He will make, or she, a direct comparison when possible, knows the various designs in the sector, has a certain degree of knowledge with respect to the design features, and shows a relatively high degree of attention when using the designs. Apparently, it's not the average consumer that, for the lawyers among us, we know, is the person you look at when you talk about likelihood of confusion between trademarks. What do I remember from that bottle I saw in the supermarket when I see the next one? Ah, yeah. It was red, wasn't it? Or something like that. That's not apparently the person we are looking at. Is this the one? Poor court, a middleman between, etc. Now, the courts of appeal in London, in The Hague, and Düsseldorf had some common opinion on how to look at the informed user in this particular case. We will later see that these courts differ quite a bit on some other things. It's the user of a tablet computer comparing the products side by side with relatively great attention, being aware of the different designs available, and having knowledge of features such design normally possess. Well, that is an application of this very recent ruling of the Court of Justice. I just give you one aspect where these courts went in totally different directions. Because if you remember the tablets of Samsung, you remember there was the trademark Samsung on. Now, the interesting question is this something you can take into account as informed user, as being a relevant difference with the design of Apple, showing no names, nothing, no ornamentation? Well, here you see what the different courts made of it. High Court in London said, it's one judge, so he said, I find that the presence of writing on the front of the tablet is a feature which the informed user will notice. The fact that the writing happens to be a trademark is irrelevant. It is ornamentation of some sort. Not so the Court of Appeal in Germany. Design law protects designs, not trademark rights, from the risk of confusion. Design protection must be seen in isolation from the manufacture of the specific product sold. A design does not become a different design simply because it's offered for sale by another manufacturer under its mark. So it's a clear method of, so to speak, writing off the existence of a trademark, whereas I think the right approach was of the High Court in London saying, well, in design law, we are not talking about trademarks. It's just something that appears to be there and will be noticed by informed consumers. I'm going even a little deeper with you into the law. So be aware. Either fall asleep or listen. A very interesting question of design law is, if we take a design like the one of Apple, how should we deal with all the prior computer screens, tablets, other computers that were around? And how should we deal with that in comparison to the Apple design? The approaches by the parties were different. And first, I have to give you this ruling, if you can read it. If you don't, doesn't matter. The Community Design Regulation says, in proceedings in respect of an infringement action of a registered community design, the Community Design Court, which is the national court, shall treat the community design as valid. If no one invokes the invalidity, there will be a valid design. And Apple says, since Samsung did not attack, at least not in the tablet case, the validity of my design, the validity is not at stake, so there is no room for judging whatever there was in the prior art. Even if prior art plays a role in infringement, you can only make one-to-one comparisons. And you cannot take one element, a square, and another element from another thing, like a glass surface, and then mix that together in a big mosaic and then say, ah, you all have that Apple, so your registration is maybe valid, but it is with a protection like this. And that was, in fact, what Apple said. For scope of protection, the common elements featuring in prior designs do not count if they appear in the Apple design. You see, there is a difference of opinion here. And Article 6, I remind you of that, says a design shall be protected by a community design to the extent that it has individual character. It's unclear still what the law is on this particular point. I tell you that this case is now pending before our Supreme Court in the Netherlands, and we have a system of an advocate general who gives a wise opinion to the Supreme Court. He came out last week with an opinion of 51 pages dealing with this issue. And he made constructions in the law that even I, or maybe I, cannot follow at all. Anyhow, the law itself is not extremely clear on this. There is a recital that is in the beginning of the law. It's just an explanation by the legislature about what they think the law should be. And there it says, the assessment as to whether a design has individual character should be based on whether the overall impression produced on an informed user clearly differs from that produced on him by the existing design corpus, taking into consideration the nature of the product, etc., etc. So, apparently, you have to take into account, when assessing individual character, you have to take into account the design corpus, which means everything that was out there. Now, the national courts in Europe, in different cases, more or less followed that approach. The highest court in Germany, the Federal Supreme Court, in a totally different case, said the scope of protection conferred on a registered design depends on the degree in which it differs from prior art designs. And Lord Justice Jacob, a very good judge, the Court of Appeal in England, in the Procter & Gamble case, said, next is not a proposition of law, but a statement about the way people perceive things. It is simply that if a new design is markedly different from anything that has gone before, it is likely to have a greater overall visual impact than if it is surrounded by kindred prior art. It follows that the overall impression created by such a design will be more significant, and the room for differences which do not create a substantially different overall impression is greater. And we have some kind of a confirmation in the meantime of the lower instance of the Court of Justice, which is the General Court of the European Union in Luxembourg, in the Antrax case, also very recent, which says a saturation of the prior art can be such that the informed user is more sensitive for differences in the design, meaning that it has less individual character, which is the notion where it all boils down to. And that is, in fact, what Samsung argues, in particular in the phone design case. Here is the prior art of what was known before the iPhone was introduced. And this is interesting to see, because if you compare the enormous marketing efforts of Apple, Jobs, in presenting the designs as something absolutely of a revolution, and you see what was already on the market and in registers over the world, you see what, in fact, a marketing machine of excellent quality Apple has. Because if you look closely to these designs, you will see in all these designs almost all the features of the iPhone. Of course, in different forms, but that makes the protection probably less big. You remember I talked to you about the freedom of the designer. Because that is that's this particular rule in the community design regulation, which says in assessing the scope of protection, the degree of freedom of the designer in developing his design shall be taken into consideration. Can you imagine that a designer designs a water glass where the hole to put the water in is here? Can you imagine? Quite difficult. Either you have to turn around and fill it. Yes, that's the solution, of course. It should be there. The freedom of the designer in that respect is restricted. He needs to have some kind of a hole there. And when it comes to more complicated designs, you can ask yourself, what are the restrictions that a designer encounters when he designs a new product? Also here, there is a difference of opinion. What influences this freedom? Now, I was talking to you about the Grupo Promer case, and the Grupo Promer case is about these things. Do you have any clue what those are? Rappers, Tazos, Pocos, no? It's a kind of a commercial thing that you put in a bag of potato chips for children to play with, and you put your advert on it, and when you click it, it makes a noise. And there was a serious design case about this going up to the Court of Justice in Luxembourg, the Grupo Pommer case. And the General Court, the lower instance of that court in Luxembourg, said the designer's degree of freedom in developing his design is established inter alia, and I emphasize those words, by the constraints of the features imposed by the technical function of the product or an element thereof, or by statutory requirements applicable to the product. Those constraints result in the standardization of certain features. So this court says inter alia, it is restricted by technical constraints. But is there maybe more than technical constraints? And if you continue to read that decision on these nice little things, the court in Luxembourg said the freedom was severely restricted because the paradigm is a small, flat or nearly flat disc with on which colored images can be printed, and often the disc is curved towards the center so that the noise is made if a child's finger presses the center of the disc, and a wrapper, because that's so we call them like that in Europe, that does not possess these characteristics is unlikely to be accepted in the marketplace. There is some technical constraint here, but not only technical. The acceptance by the marketplace, not sure how this should be read. I'm not sure whether you can see these pictures here, but there was no place to put them elsewhere. A design case that went up to the General Court in Luxembourg. I had the pleasure of arguing that case before the court. It is on conference microphone systems. That maybe that you can see, not in the back, but here in the front. This is what you see on your desk when you are in a conference with a microphone. You open it, etc. The question this General Court dealt with was the question whether a design does or does not follow a general design trend, because that was argued by the alleged infringer. I'm just following a trend. I'm not infringing. It is relevant, said this court, at the most in relation to the aesthetic perception of the design concerns, and can therefore possibly have an influence on the commercial success of the product in which the design is incorporated. It is not relevant in the examination of the individual character of the design concerned, which consists in verifying whether the overall impression produced by it differs from the overall impressions produced by the designs made available earlier, irrespective of the aesthetic and commercial consideration. So this court apparently says trends, fashion, that are not restrictions of the freedom of designer. The question is whether that is true. When I go back to the original documents that the Commission in Europe proposed when 10 years ago they started to introduce the community design, it says this, the green paper by the EU Commission in 1991. The provision expresses in principle that the more limited the freedom of the designer is in developing his design, the more weight has to be given to small differences or variations. And when they are talking about constraints, they are talking about technical or marketing constraints, which means that even, for example, deep-rooted marketing requirements by clients, features imposed by fashion, could make a designer to use those when he develops a new design. Right, complicated story. We go back to the Apple community design registration, and we are going to look at what was before this community design registration was filed, known in the prior art. This is a US patent application called Ozolins, where you see a screen that was taken apart in different parts, but it is a small, thin screen with a inner window on which data could be published. That was known before the iPad or this design registration was on the market. Compaq, Hewlett-Packard, had this tablet computer, a standalone tablet computer, already 20 years ago. Of course, it is much thicker, but not that thicker in dimensions. Don't forget about the iPad. Think of that registration, where also the design is a little bit thicker. The only difference is that this has not a glass surface going all over the product. There's a little bit of a bezel around it. But nevertheless, this design existed, as well as this one, which in front, with these signs meaning an overall glass surface, was already known in the market. And finally, this standalone, it's not purely a monitor by LG, it is a standalone computer, which of course in the back it has nothing to do with the design we are talking about. But if you look at the design of the front, that comes very, very close to what we know as being the iPad, and very close to the design of that registration. So, when we are putting that design in front of the judge and say Samsung is infringing with his tablets, knowing that this was around, this prior art, how does that then play a role in the assessing of infringement? And again, this is the question of, does it give the same overall impression, taking into account what the informed user already knows? Because he is supposed to know the design corpus. And in the Grupo Promer case, the Court of Justice said, when possible, the informed user will make direct comparison with knowledge of features designs normally possess. So, among others, the ones that you saw. However, it cannot be ruled out, did the court, of course, they always have exceptions to the general rule, that such a comparison may be impracticable or uncommon in the sector concerned. Yeah, I can imagine that if you have a design for a ship, on paper it's quite difficult to immediately make a direct comparison with the ship in the harbor. I mean, it's huge things. I mean, you can't make those direct comparisons. So the question is this direct comparison, which I think is also the approach under South African design law, that you look at those side by side. Is that the correct rule? And we are now in doubt because of a very recent, end of last year, the Court of Justice gave a decision in the Neumann versus Baena case. And this is an interesting design case, but it is not entirely a design case, but because what happened was that this design was registered, I don't know for what, I think for promotional items on T-shirts, etc. And this was a community trademark registration that filed a cancellation action against this community design registration. And then the court in Luxembourg, although it repeats the Grupo Promer principle of the direct comparison, but says the assessment of designs under the community design regulation is not limited to direct comparison. So first you come with a general rule, and then suddenly, puff, you take it away. And there was no error in law by the lower court reasoning on the informed user's imperfect recollection of the overall impression produced by the two silhouettes. And then we suddenly feel a trademark approach coming in, the imperfect recollection, which is now we are not sure what this decision means. Now, what do the courts do with this? Again, the Apple design with the tablet of Samsung. Or if you look at it in a different way and you measure the dimensions, you see in the back you see the design of Apple, and in the front you see the tablet of Samsung, and then you see that there are differences in dimension. If you go to the back side of the registration of Apple, you see an absolutely flat surface at the back, and to the right of the Galaxy 7.7 you see a surface that has different elements, different features. And if you do the measurement even a little bit more precise, you can see here that the design registration has a rather thick, rounded shape. It's rather thick. If you compare that to the tablets of, for example, the 10.1 tablet, you see a totally different rounding here and a relation thickness and width that is different from the design registration. And if you go even to the 10.1V, you see the flat surface with the surface on the back of this Galaxy tablet. So the question really is, does this produce the same overall impression on the informed user? The UK High Court, confirmed in appeal, gave a very interesting decision. It said, the informed user's overall impression of each of the Samsung Galaxy tablets is the following. From the front, they belong to the family which includes the Apple design. But the Samsung products are very thin, almost insubstantial members of that family, with unusual details on the back. They do not have the same understated and extreme simplicity which is possessed by the Apple design. They are not as cool. This is a judge telling us. They are not as cool. Can you imagine? A Dutch judge would never put this in a judgment. This became, of course, a famous word in this case in Europe. The overall impression is different. The Court of Appeal in The Hague followed, in fact, this reasoning, well, a little bit different, but also said these products of Samsung make a different overall impression, but that's the case pending before our Supreme Court. And the Court of Appeal in Düsseldorf had a different opinion. To my surprise, I must say, they said that the 7.7 had the same overall impression and therefore was infringing. And the lower court said there was no infringement by the 10.1, which I find a little bit strange. Let me finally briefly go to the iPhone. This is the registration of Apple for the iPhone 4. So it's a representation of the product itself. So you can also maybe look a little bit at the product itself. And I remind you of the prior art. So this is the new registration by Apple. This is the prior art. And the question of infringement, just as an example, I give you the district court in The Hague. They said there is no infringement. One of the reasons is that, of course, the common features in the prior art should not be taken into account. The fact that this has a screen that is square in the middle of a product that is also square should not be taken into account, because that was already known. That's nothing new, so that should not be taken into account. The buttons are different here. This is a square button, a round button. There is, of course, the trademark Samsung on, and on the what is very important is this bezel on the side of the band, so to speak, that stands out a little bit, and that's different from what Samsung has. And the back also has different features. And that was for the court in The Hague a reason to say there is no infringement. My last slide deals with an interesting question that I will not answer today. Why the hell? Oh, my goodness, the answer is already there. Did Apple not file for trademark registrations? Could this not have been a trademark? Because shapes can be a trademark. The problem with that is that under the rules of the European Court of Justice on three-dimensional marks, It is extremely difficult to get a trademark for a shape, unless you show, as the Americans call it, secondary meaning, inburgering. I'm not sure whether that is a notion that is also in South Africa known, but anyhow, secondary meaning. And maybe Apple could have had a good chance there. I'm not sure. Whether they would win that case, totally different story. Thank you very much.